Hey, this is Andrew, and I'm walking around the campus of Loyola University. And you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is great to be here with you today for show number 1006. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. The great Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio, and I hope you are staying warm. It is gnarly out there. Go ahead, pull the covers up over your head, hunker down. And if you have to go outside, bundle up and layer up. Speaking of bundling up, it's amazing to me when I see people in cold weather who are outside and don't have a coat on by choice, or people who are wearing shorts in this kind of weather. Now, to be fair, I haven't seen that happening in the last 24 hours with this extreme cold, but this is something I've noticed at my day job as a high school history teacher. Usually, the kid who does this is a teenage boy who will come into the school with no jacket on, or will come into the school wearing shorts. And of course, sometimes I see the no jacket, no shorts combo. That's something. I recently saw a student inside the school who was wearing shorts, and it was cold out, but it wasn't like this. And I said jokingly to this boy, "Hey, beautiful day for shorts, am I right?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, totally, totally, Mr. Steven," and gave me a fist bump. He was on board. So, I don't know what that's about. Is it trying to be cool kind of thing? Is it a case of teenage metabolisms that are just supercharged and giving off so much heat? I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I don't remember doing this in high school. I always had a coat on. I wasn't dressed not appropriate for wintertime. However, I do remember not bringing my coat with me during the winter when I would go out in college. When I was up at Loyola, our usual haunt, Hamilton's, was close by campus. And when I was there in the early 2000s, this was before the indoor smoking ban went into effect. I hated smoky bars because the smoke would just get into everything. It would get into your hair, your clothes, and yeah, coats. In my mind, it was one less smoky thing I'd have to deal with the next morning if I didn't have a coat. So I'd go out in the winter in Chicago without a coat. And then after the bar, I'd wait for the red line to take me from Loyola to Bryn Mawr late night so I can enjoy homemade tacos from the now defunct El Norte restaurant. R.I.P. El Norte. And R.I.P. me not wearing a coat. If I'm going out these days, I am taking a coat with me. So thanks, Rod Blagojevich, for signing the indoor smoking ban into law all those years ago. Never thought I'd be thanking Rod Blagojevich here on the air, but what a world we're living in, huh? Bottom line, kids, wear your coats. And speaking of kids, kids go to school. Just not yesterday, I suppose. Today on the show, we learn about a new study out of the University of Chicago that shows the importance of student attendance and the correlation with future success in school. Also, we learn about a local nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom dedicated to telling the stories of Chicago's immigrant community. So buckle up. We've got a good show for you today, and I'm in a parka right now. So there's that. Nationally, we are talking a lot about immigration. And locally, Chicago's history has long been shaped by immigrants and their stories of struggle. These stories are central to understanding the city we know today. Yet, the local media landscape hasn't always fully served immigrant communities. Borderless Magazine is working to change that. Published online at borderlessmag.org and based in Chicago, the outlet centers the voices of immigrants in our community and provides reporting and resources created with and for immigrants in our community. Nissa Ree is the co-founder and executive director of Borderless Magazine, and she is here with us today on the show. Nissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So, like I was saying, I mean, immigration, it is just such a hot topic now and everything surrounding it. So that's really going in the national conversation right now. And thinking of back a few years here to 2017, let's go back to 2017, just to kind of tell the story about how all of this got started with Borderless Magazine, because at that time, brand new President Trump signs the Muslim travel ban, and that kind of sets things in motion to get Borderless going. Tell us how all this happened.
So yes, back in 2017, I had spent about a decade in journalism working as a reporter in Asia and Chicago, covering a lot of international issues and criminal justice. And when the Muslim travel ban happened, I looked around and I saw a lot of news stories about people crying in airports and the kind of things that are happening in Washington. But I didn't see a lot of coverage answering the question, what does this mean for immigrants living in our city? And why does this matter? Why does this matter for Chicagoans in general? So I saw a hole in the coverage, and I saw it as an opportunity to fill that hole. So myself and two other journalists at the time, we decided to create a rapid response media project. It was just a blog. We threw it up really quickly a couple weeks after the travel ban, so in February 2017, and just started telling the stories of immigrants impacted by the travel ban in their own words. So it was a lot of kind of as told to stories, oral history style stories. And from that started building this record of what was happening, but also hearing from folks that how important and how necessary this kind of reporting was. And you're right, at that time, you know, we have lost so many jobs and so many news outlets in our city. And in 2017, things were looking really bad. There are 1.7 million immigrants in the Chicago area, but very few publications at that time were publishing in Spanish. Very few were thinking about immigrants and immigration as a key part of their coverage, let alone audience. So we saw an opportunity and we ran with it. And out of that comes Borderless Magazine.
Yeah. So I think something, a few things you said there are really important, that it is true that the immigrant community is underserved when it comes to media. So you think about if you're part of that community, you want to know what's going on around here, and everything isn't necessarily tailored to that community. There's that part, but also if you're in that community, where do you go if you have a legal question, or if there is an immigration officer asking you questions, how do you find out what you can do or what you should do? This is kind of what you are including in your reporting, in addition to doing what we would, I guess, call traditional journalism, right?
Right. So we talk about Chicago issues through an immigration and immigrant lens. And part of that is advocating for other news outlets to cover immigration and think about immigrants. I always say, you know, everyone should be covering this issue, because again, immigrants are such a core part of our audience, our Chicago audience. Mm-hmm. And it's not just something that should be covered in talking about ICE raids, but also in sports, in food reviews, restaurant reviews. So it should be expansive. And that's what we're doing at Borderless. So we do a lot of investigations, traditional accountability journalism, that sort of thing. But then we also do stories about community and gentrification and restaurants, and really trying to show a more holistic picture of what does it mean to live and be in an immigrant community in Chicago. And I'll mention too that, you know, there's 1.6 million immigrants, but all of those people have family members. Mm-hmm. So there's so much multicultural, multi-status households in Chicago that it's really an issue that's touching way beyond the 1.6 million people.
Yeah, and I think that is something to think about here, because you are, as you're talking about, centering immigrant voices. And what does that mean? Well, we think about if we pick up a newspaper, or I mean, those who still pick up newspapers, but if you're going online and you look at a newspaper and you feel like, oh, right, this newspaper is kind of speaking my language, both literally and figuratively, like I can relate to this paper here, what's being reported. But that's also what you're doing for the immigrant community, because they don't have that, or they don't have that to the same degree that everyone else does. So you are thinking about their stories, but also what's going to be beneficial to their family members. And it's stuff, and I was looking at your site again, it's borderlessmag.org. I mean, you've got legal reporting, you've got stories of the struggles in the immigrant community, you've got things like what to do if ICE shows up in your small business, how to respond. So you have those rapid response kind of articles in there, as well as longer form journalism. So that's really, when we talk about centering the immigrant experience and what's relevant, that's kind of what we're talking about, aren't we?
Yes. And what we see a lot is our stories are being used in these kind of multi-generational households. So we publish everything in English and Spanish, and about 40% of our audience is reading our stories in Spanish. And what will often happen is that adult child of an immigrant will read the story in English, and then they'll share the story with their parent in Spanish. And we see that kind of like dialogue happening. And it's really cool to see that really we're addressing accessibility in news and information in a way that we're not seeing elsewhere.
So, all right, you are a nonprofit newsroom here, and you go beyond reporting. We were talking about how there are a lot of stories that you cover within the immigrant community and what that looks like. But you also mentor emerging journalists. Tell us about this program, because I think this is so cool to train the next generation.
Yeah, and I think it's so important. You know, as I mentioned, the journalism industry has really been hit hard. I've been a journalist for about 20 years, and there is only a small percentage of us left from that time 20 years ago. So we are losing journalists left and right, and it can be hard to get into the industry because there are not that many jobs anymore. So we created the Pathways program as part of Borderless to create literally that pathway for emerging journalists from immigrant communities to get the experience, get the clips, and be able to take that to find another job. So graduates of our program have gone on to work at the Washington Post, NBC, San Francisco Chronicle, NPR, a lot of large outlets, which is really great to see. And then some of them come back or stay on as reporters at Borderless, which we love to see too. So Borderless, you know, another thing that makes us unique is over 90% of our stories are reported or photographed by people from immigrant communities. And so it's really an interesting place to learn about journalism, because people are very close to the stories that they are reporting on.
And I have to think that that is empowering if people are coming from an immigrant community, especially today where the national conversation, you know, everything seems to be stacked against that community with regards to the government and everything that's going on. So to be able to say, hey, I'm from this community, I am going to tell the stories of my community so I can educate my community, that just has to be an empowering thing.
You know, Mike, I think it's empowering, but I think it can also be heavy work. You know, the last year has been really challenging for immigrant communities, but also for our reporters. You know, every time we're writing stories about ICE, for instance, I hear my reporters talking about how this story reminds them of their dad, or they're worried about their grandparent. Mm. And so it becomes very personal. And at the same time, we as a team have really had to think about security and safety in different ways, because, of course, we don't want our stories to endanger one of our journalists' immigration statuses, for example. And so it does make it a little complicated, but it also, there's power in that complication. And I think you're right that there is you know, being able to a lot of this work and with our, you know, original work as the as told to oral history type reporting, which we still do to this day, is about handing the microphone back to community members rather than just leaving it to journalists to frame narratives. And I think there is real power in that.
And that goes into a question I was wondering about with the mainstream reporting about immigration and everything that's going on recently. And look, there is lots of good reporting out there at the national level and the local level. And what you're talking about here, I think, is unique because it is such a unique perspective from those folks maybe who are a part of that community, but also who know people in that community. And I'm wondering, as you look kind of big picture here at where we've been over the last year or so with this reporting, I mean, what is the mainstream maybe missing with regards to immigration, or what does the mainstream reporting get wrong? What is that like when you look at this big picture and you say, oh, well, they missed the mark there? Is there a critique that maybe you have of kind of the big picture reporting?
I think some of it goes to context and some to accessibility. So from the context standpoint, because we've been doing this work for 9 years, we can really see the picture. We can compare what's happening to now to what happened under Biden, to what happened under the first Trump administration. We can really bring our reporters or bring our community and our readers on this journey and help them root what's happening in that bigger context. I think too, you know, specifically when it comes to ICE, things that are happening right now are absolutely unprecedented. You know, ICE is the highest funded law enforcement agency today, and that is absolutely new. Things are different. But at the same time, there have been ICE raids in Chicago's for years. There were under Biden, and there was not much reporting on that. So I think some of what is missing is the context. I think the other part, again, is the accessibility. You know, 1 in 3 people in Chicago speak Spanish at home. We as a news ecosystem are still not serving that population. You know, not 1 in 3 news outlets are publishing in Spanish. So I think, you know, if we really want to advance the reporting about immigration, we need to start publishing in languages that people speak and in ways that people can understand it. And that also means, you know, thinking about stories on Instagram or TikTok or going to the places people are at. We do a lot of field canvassing at Borderless where we take our stories out into the streets, go to train stations, go to food pantries, and really try to meet people where they're at rather than just waiting for them to find our website.
And to go to this website, borderlessmag.org, again, there's a lot of really important information up there and insight into this immigrant community and the experiences of immigrants in Chicago. And as you have done this work now for many years, Nyssa, and your work, this very important work, I think, with Borderless Magazine, what's something you wish more people knew or understood about the immigrant experience or immigrant stories in Chicago and beyond?
Ooh, I think there's so much. I think one thing is just understanding how essential and intertwined immigrants are to our everyday lives. I think it's not some separate population. They're Chicagoans and they go to our schools, they run our businesses, they are our spouses, they are our loved ones. And once we see immigrants as just Chicagoans and not as a separate population, I think that really shifts how we talk about a lot of these things, you know, including ICE enforcement, including accessibility, including what is the role of journalism and news. So I think I encourage people to broaden the way that they think about immigrants and immigration, and understand that they are such a crucial part of our community and everywhere.
And it's a story of humanity. You know, I think this is really just such a human story. And if you're buying the narrative that's out there coming from the federal government right now, then you're definitely only getting one side of the story, or a very, very, very limited story about the immigrant community. And when you see that, hey, you know what? Immigrants have the same kind of feelings and wants that everyone else has, because we're all human and we all want to live a good life, to love and be loved. We all have that in common. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves of that. And I think going to an outlet like Borderless Magazine, it really helps us with that. So, Nyssa, I know that this, like you're saying here, it's been a tough year. It's been a very heavy year. So what's next for Borderless Magazine? As you look here, we're still early in the new year in 2026. So what are you looking at here on the horizon for Borderless?
Well, we just released our first strategic plan, which was really exciting. That was a year's worth of work. And we are really rooted in community, so we involved community in the production of that. I think it's also worth mentioning that, you know, not only we're nonprofit, but we're nonpartisan. I think when people hear, oh, you're an immigration news outlet, or you're an outlet that serves immigrants, I think immediately there's a thought that you're political, and that is not the case for us. So I think, you know, we are operating in a really interesting moment where immigrants are being targeted with violence and with hatred in a really new and scary way. So we'll continue to cover these issues. We are planning on expanding our newsroom. We want to better serve Chicagoans. There's so many stories out there that we just can't get to. We get so many tips every day that our reporters just can't cover because we're so small. So the plan really is to expand our newsroom and keep up the work, because there's so much work to be done.
There is a lot of work to be done, and I know that you're in the thick of it. Everyone over at Borderless Magazine as well. It's a human story, and I think we need to keep telling these stories to keep them in the conversation and offer perspectives that maybe aren't always getting out there. That's what really you're about in that immigrant community. So we can all check out the website borderlessmag.org for Borderless Magazine, a nonprofit newsroom covering the immigrant community, the voices in that community, and really providing some wonderful reporting and resources. And that's all based in Chicago. Nyssa Ree is the co-founder and executive director of Borderless Magazine. Nyssa, thank you so much for talking to us today and for all of your hard work, and keep it going.
Thank you.
COVID-19 pandemic impacted our entire society, especially the education of children. In Chicago, school absenteeism dramatically increased after the pandemic, and this raises questions about future student success. There is a new report from the University of Chicago called Connection, Trust, and Learning: Student Attendance in the Middle and High School Grades Following the COVID-19 Pandemic. This report provides insights on student attendance and the impact of that student attendance on student learning, development, and well-being. Merrill Antony is a senior research analyst at the UChicago Consortium on School Research and a co-author of this report, and she joins us today on Outside the Loop. Merrill, welcome to the show. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Nice to have you here. So, this report focuses on student absenteeism, and I said that there is an increase in student absenteeism after the pandemic. How much of an increase are we seeing these days?
Yes. So what we see in our study is that the chronic absenteeism, which is defined as missing 10% or more of the school days, increased by about 20 percentage points in the post-pandemic years. But not only were most students chronically absent, we also had more students who were very chronically absent, some of them missing almost 20% or more of the school days, which is around 36 days. And then you also had fewer students in the post-pandemic years with stronger attendance, so which is missing 5% or less of the school days, which is approximately they having 95% attendance or more, which is a problem in Chicago, but also like across the nation. And, you know, this is a trend that we are seeing overall.
And so, all right, you know, we might think, okay, of course, attendance in school matters. Duh. But this report really aims to quantify that thought. So what do the data tell us about the importance of school attendance and student success overall?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, you know, one of the things that we have been hearing is that, you know, the pre-pandemic relationship between attendance and grades and test scores, so student achievement, do they actually still hold today in the post-pandemic years? Our study finds a very strong relationship between attendance and test scores, and it's even more stronger compared to before the pandemic. So you really do need to be in school to really acquire this knowledge, and that is, you know, that is being tested in these exams. So grades were lower among students who were absent a lot, but overall, the absenteeism has that clear impact on learning. The more the school days students have missed, the lower their lower their test scores and their grades.
And this is, of course, again, after the pandemic. So we think about during the pandemic, there was a period there where nobody was doing anything, but students weren't in school. And so to kind of gauge student success during that time, I mean, there are all kinds of social impacts and emotional impacts because of this isolation that so many of us were experiencing, but nobody was in school. And now we're saying, hey, look, you have to be among peers, among faculty. That really helps students overall, doesn't it?
Yes. You know, COVID-19 was this unique thing that happened, right? And we had to, schools had to really pivot into a virtual learning environment. But now that, you know, we are in person, there are still a lot of things that are happening virtually, right? Like some of the assignments can be done online. You are able to communicate with teachers online. There's also more work from home, so sometimes students stay back. There's also all kinds of other barriers that are outside of the locus of control of a school. There could be transportation barriers, mental health, like you said, socialization that went down during the pandemic. But even given all of that, I think being in person in school, what the research is actually showing is the school environment is really important to drive the attendance, especially in this post-pandemic years, to really help improve that student-peer relationship. And it has that influence on attendance.
Thinking about why absenteeism occurs in the first place, I think maybe we might default to, well, maybe kids just don't like school. And, you know, we've all been there. We've all been in school. And some days you just don't want to go. But what this report is saying is we can't always blame the school. So in terms of why this is happening, let's talk a little bit about that. What do we think is going on here?
That's a good question. I think, you know, obviously this study focuses a lot more on one aspect of what's happening within the school. So the school climate is one of the things that we have been focusing on. There are obviously other factors that could also explain why the student is not being able to come to school. But at the same time, one key finding that we see is that there are large differences even across schools in the degree to which absenteeism increased after the pandemic. And so these differences are large even among schools that are serving similar student population. So what I mean over here is that students who have been living in similar neighborhoods, you know, who may have similar prior attendance, prior achievement, they actually attend some schools more than the others. So which actually shows that school environment is a very influential factor for student attendance.
That's amazing. And that's a really, I think, fascinating part of this report, that absence rates varied considerably, even in schools serving similar student populations from similar neighborhoods. So what you're saying here is because of that, we have to think about, well, all right, what's going on in the school? Is it the climate? Is it the environment of that school? Because it's the relatively the same population and the same neighborhood. So the importance of school climate, There is a real kind of important thing that we want to maybe hone in on here. And even though it's not necessarily the school's fault for absenteeism, but we have to think about the student climate and the school climate.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, there's so much only that the schools have under control. But I think school climate is one of those things that we are seeing can have that direct influence. So we looked at the 5E Essential Survey, which is basically a survey that the state of Illinois and the Chicago Public Schools take. The students and teachers report on school climate each year. And what we see is that students who have reported that they feel safe, who have these trusting relationships with teachers and peers, tend to attend school more. And so it's directly linked to their attendance. And we also see that teachers who have reported having this trusting relationship with parents, or parents who are being more involved with school, their students have better attendance in those schools as well.
So the schools can address this. I mean, we think about how do we get students into schools so they can have the best possible outcome. And if we're saying here that it looks like the data show that school climate is a really big factor, then that's something that schools can address. So if there is some, I guess, good news we can take from this report, it is that schools need to focus on creating a welcoming and safe climate for students.
Yes, absolutely. I think schools can and they do influence student attendance, and which is what we are seeing in our study. You know, how strongly school climate has been influencing about whether students have been showing up, like, and especially in the post-pandemic, because the study looks at both the pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, and we see that this relationship with school climate is much more stronger right now. So I think it's schools can really do a lot more, and they are influencing student attendance.
I'm wondering here, and this is totally, this just popped in my head, but in Illinois, there is a big movement for homeschooling. And I've talked about that on my show before. And I think about that environment. You know, if someone is getting homeschooled, they are where they live, and maybe a parent or guardian is doing that education. And I'm wondering how that might fit into all this. If we're saying that being in school with peers and trained teachers, if that really makes a difference. And I don't know, like, is this something that you had thought about in this research here? What happens during homeschooling?
Yeah, that's a good question. We actually did not look into homeschooling specifically. So, yeah, I won't be able to answer that question. But again, like I said, with respect to Chicago Public Schools and, you know, just the data that we are currently seeing, we do see that attending school regularly does have a much more stronger influence. But again, there's more to come and there's more data that we can look at. So I won't be able to answer around homeschooling, not just yet.
Not yet, right. There is more to come. And I asked you earlier about why absenteeism might happen. And I think that might be the next step here in your research, is looking at, well, why specifically aren't students going to school? And you mentioned that there is issues of feeling safe and welcome and the school climate, but there are other variables out there. You mentioned transportation, what's going on at home, what's going on in terms of the personal life of the student. So I think that might be an area where there could be more research in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been working with the Chicago Public Schools to try and understand the different initiatives and strategies that are currently ongoing, and, like, you know, what has been successful. So one of the next steps for us is actually to dig a little deeper into these practices. We plan to go to some of these schools, try and understand some of these strategies that have been successful in the post-pandemic, but then also to talk to students and families and get their perspectives as well on these strategies.
So bottom line here, attendance matters. Students, for optimal success, they should be in the school, in the classroom, and with their peers, learning from teachers and experiencing life as a student. I think that's really what it comes down to. And attendance does matter. And I'm excited to see the rest of the research here that's coming out of the UChicago Consortium on School Research. And Meryl Antony is a senior research analyst at the UChicago Consortium, and she's a co-author of the report called Connection, Trust, and Learning: Student Attendance in the Middle and High School Grades Following the COVID-19 Pandemic. Meryl, thank you so much for talking to us today. Education is a really important topic, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm very happy to talk about the report.
And that does it. Outside the Loop show number 1006 is just about done. I appreciate you listening. Thank you so much. Thanks also to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. Stay warm out there, and I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.